back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Nothing more Baltimore Positive than opening day. All of our Wise Conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. We are going to be out and about on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, all presented by the Maryland Lottery. I'm headed up to Hampstead and my friends at Greenmount Station with the OTB soon to have some sports wagering, perhaps. We're going to have Chris on Friday. That's this week. Good Friday is going to be a great Friday up in Carroll County. Then next week, we are at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog in White Marsh. That's Coney Island Hot Dog and Crab Cake. Looking forward to that as well with Andy and telling some old Highland Town stories of my days of going to Memorial Stadium and picking up a G&A Coney Island Hot Dog on the way to opening day. And then the 27th, we're going to be at Conrad's Crabs talking about their incredible crabs. I'm going to have some Betty Boop scratch-offs. They're going to freshen me up with some scratch-offs to give away courtesy of the Maryland Lottery. And a shout-out to our friends at Goodwill Industries as well, who are sponsoring the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I have not had a crab cake with this guy in a while, although we did dine at Pappas, who's a new sponsor. Welcome aboard, Pappas, as well. Luke Jones joins us now. He will be doing the hot dogs, right? Are you mustard on your dog? How do you go dog on opening day? What do you do?
I'm usually plain. I am plain. I'm boring. But I will plan on having a hot dog.
No condiment on your hot dog.
No, I'm weird. I have my.
Dude, that's un-American. Where are you?
I have my father to thank for that. He was the same. Fewer condiments. He didn't do ketchup with his French fries or even anything like that. I mean, he was as plain as it gets with that kind of stuff. I do a little bit here and there, but hot dogs, I'll do a chili dog every once in a while. I'll do something like that, but I'm ketchup, mustard. Nah, I mean, I'm weird. I know it. I'll take my medicine on that. That's fine. But I definitely enjoy a hot dog or two out at the ballpark, that's for sure.
So, Luke, you have a press credential, and much like with the football team these days, I am persona non-nester. I'm in my 17th year now of being banned by the Orioles and not having a press credential. So over the weekend, thought about getting a ticket, how much it would cost. I know when they put the schedule out a month ago, it was going to be $85 to sit on the roof, and, I'm going to get my opening day ticket. Now I'm sitting there $12 on SeatGeek. Like $17.53 with the juice. And I still haven't purchased. And I guess it's not going to be full, and that's not going to be a news event, right? And they're 0-3 coming into it, and Lord knows what they'll be when it's all over with. But just give me some impressions of the first weekend of baseball as you're seeing it. You know, they have high hopes for the starting pitching to at least be decent, and Zimmerman's going to give his go on opening day, and he's a local kid. Shout out to our friends at Fadley's. Much love for them down at Lexington Market. But this really looks like a continuation of what we've seen before, which is they don't have major league pitching. And then, you know, they got a couple guys that can hit, and we'll see how the left field wall plays and all that. But they don't have any pitching at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have a few, but not enough. And I think – for me, the major theme going into this season once again is, I mean, look, they're the worst team in the AL East. They're by all likelihood the worst team in the AL once again.
The worst team in the galaxy.
I mean, they're picking first overall come the amateur draft this summer. We know that. I think if you're looking for, I guess you could call it optimism, is this feels like it could be the first time in quite a while. I mean, you even have to go back to maybe 2014, smack dab in the middle of the Buck Showalter, Dan Duquette era, where I do at least feel there's an argument to be made that they could be better later in the season than they're going to be early on because of the pitching and because Grayson Rodriguez, go take a look at what he did in his Triple A debut a couple nights ago and what he, you know, by, you know, pretty, I don't know if I'd say consensus, but many people out there feel he's the best pitching prospect in baseball that's awaiting his major league debut at some point here, probably this summer, if all goes well and he stays healthy. You have DL Hall, you have Kyle Bradish, who's at AAA now. So not that those guys are
with Rodriguez in the new era. I mean, I need you to nerd this out for me as to how long they have to wait on clocks now with the new collective. But like what's going to start these guys' clocks, which has historically over the last 20 years, this century, been an issue all along for anyone that's drafted, whether it was Weeders, just going back, you know, for any team in any organization, this has been a major thing in the modern era of baseball as why aren't these kids here now? They're not starting their clock. So why are these kids not
here? Well, Grayson Rodriguez hasn't pitched above double A yet. I mean, D.L. Hall missed the whole second half of last year because he had a stress reaction in his elbow and was at buoy.
It would be rushing then.
I mean, now, if the Orioles are ready to contend right now, could you make an argument that Grayson Rodriguez might skip triple A or maybe only be there a couple weeks and then gets caught up? Sure, I think there's an argument to be made there, but there's a case where development should take precedent over him pitching for a team that's, you know, the only drama is going to be, do they avoid 100 losses? I mean, that's just reality. But keep in mind with the new CBA, and again, I'm trying to get as well-versed in this as anyone, and, you know, there's been parts of it that, you know, weren't even out there really for public consumption that were part of the CBA. Like, for example, we're going to see ads on uniforms starting next year, like we've seen in the NBA with their jerseys.
Is that sort of like animal style at In-N-Out Burger? It's sort of the unwritten rules of baseball?
I mean, no. I think it's just those things that they try to... Not to get political, but they always talk about pork in bills, right? You know, things that they throw in there that, you know, different things that are attached to whatever something's called. And I think a CBA has... I guess, for lack of a better comparison, kind of has some things like that. But to answer your question, keep in mind, now with rookie of the year voting, first or second, you know, even if you're not called up at the beginning of the season, you can get a full year of service time. There's some mechanisms that are in place. We are seeing some rookies around the league make their opening day debut and not be manipulated, so to speak, as it pertains to the Orioles. I mean, the only one that would have been a potential issue here and, you know, for the Orioles' sake, in a big picture sense, maybe that's why you're not devastated about Adley Rutschman having the triceps issue early on in spring training, because he's really the only guy where you would have said, all right, I mean, he played at Triple A last year, did well there. He won one overall. It's going to be 3 years this June since he was picked first overall. He's already 24 at this point. He's the one guy, if he were playing in the minor leagues completely healthy and they had decided to start him at Norfolk, that's where you would have said, all right, I mean, we see what's going on here. But he did have the injury. He's working his way back. Does sound like it'll be a matter of weeks. You know what? I expect we're going to see him, if not late April, I would think early May. But those other guys, there's a little bit of development yet left to do. And, you know, I mean, Bradish doesn't have the same ceiling as Hall or Grayson Rodriguez, but you know, he's another guy that, you know, that they actually acquired in the Dylan Bundy trade a couple off seasons ago that
he's a 3-4 starter in their mind, right?
I mean, probably a number four starter if things kind of shake out well.
And
I mean,
you're wondering who the Miguel Gonzalez and the way in.
Sure. Well, and that's where, and you and I talked about this a lot. And I mean, we didn't really get any answers over the weekend because obviously Tyler Wells was in the bullpen last year as a Rule 5 pick. Did a nice job, you know, just threw too many pitches on Sunday. I mean, the Rays, that lineup, even if it's guys you don't know, you know, because they have all these interchangeable parts and they trade guys and they deal guys and they bring new guys up. They work counts and it's incredible. And they'll just have you throw pitch after pitch after pitch, get to two strikes, can't put someone away. And then you give up a home run, you know, you throw one down the pipe and it's just not good. And they make you pay for that. So that's what happened to Tyler Wells. You know, I'm intrigued by him potentially as a starter. That doesn't mean I think it's necessarily going to work out, but he pitched well enough last year where I want to see it. And, you know, he throws in the mid 90s and he's got a slider changeup combination that I think out of the bullpen played really well last year. Question is, will it hold up being stretched out, going through a lineup a couple of times? But the overall disappointment for me last year wasn't 110 losses. It wasn't that we had to wait another year to see Adley Rutschman. It wasn't even Yusniel Diaz having a lost season last year. It was this group of Keegan Aiken, Dean Kramer, Bruce Zimmerman, because of the health picture for him, not so much performance, but go down the list, Mike Ballman, who dealt with health, you know, building up. That whole tier of guys
given a chance. They were all given the ball, right? Literally.
I mean, Ballman wasn't because he was the one who he had the flexor mass issue at the alternate training site late in summer of 2020. You know, the weird pandemic year, no minor leagues. But the rest of those guys that I mentioned, you know, throw in Zach Lowther, throw in Alexander Wells. they all got time. And these guys aren't that young. They're mid-20s. You know, these guys are 25, 26, 27. So they're not really, and it's why they're not on top 100 lists in the way that Grayson Rodriguez and DL Hall are. But my goal last year, looking at the Orioles, you know, just looking at it from an objective third-party stance, as far as what would you like to see out of that group, I wanted to see one, if not two guys, look like what you just said. Could they be a Miguel Gonzalez for them, a Wei-Yin Chen for them, meaning not a legitimate ace, not a guy that you're going to pencil in as your number one or number two starter, but guys that can give you innings on the back half of the rotation and competitive outings and give you a chance to win. And we just didn't see nearly enough signs like about that. Bruce Zimmerman had his moments, but he missed half the season. And you know, until you can show you're durable, that's going to be suspect. So, you know, we didn't really see, you know, too much of that group over the weekend, although Keegan Aiken pitched really well out of the bullpen on Saturday, you know, missed bats, and maybe that's going to be the role for him. Maybe he's a bulk pitcher that is going to pitch a little long relief. They're doing some of this tandem stuff, but I still look at one of the early goals. While we're waiting on Rutschman on the catching side, while we're waiting on perhaps a Yusniel Diaz or a Kyle Stowers to come up from AAA to be in that outfield picture, while we're waiting on Grayson Rodriguez and DL Hall, Mike Elias made a decision. It's not one that I necessarily agreed with in terms of I would have gone out and gotten another veteran pitcher if for no other reason to stabilize your rotation from a functionality standpoint, that you're not in a position where you just have the Norfolk train endlessly going, trying to bring up a pitcher who can is just healthy and fresh enough to pitch. But they decided they were going to run it back again as far as these mid-20s, you know, this kind of the last wave of the Duquette era of pitching prospects to see if any of these guys can figure it out and be better. And, you know, in fairness to all those guys, even though all 30 teams have dealt with this, so it's not a full-blown excuse, because at some point you got to go out and do it. You know, this was a group that was kind of at the AAA level entering 2020, and they lost a year. You know, so when you're talking about that, coupled with the fact that it was a brand new regime and you're changing your player development process and different things you're doing.
And you have to get Aaron Judge out all of
this. Well, and that's the other thing too, right? And ultimately, again, the other 29 teams had to do this too, and other young pitchers around the league are succeeding. So it's not, ultimately, it can't be an excuse. But if you're looking for an explanation on why guys that were more fringe type prospects, you know, guys that you're saying, okay, in a realistic best case scenario, maybe he could be our number four starter for the next 3 years. You know, those kinds of scenarios. Yeah. The circumstances haven't helped them, but
it felt like they had six or seven guys trying to be a fifth starter and almost none of them
could do it.
Pulled that off.
Sure. And that's why I said last year, it wasn't going 52-110, although certainly that was a big reason why they went 52-110. It was coming out of that long last place, number one overall pick kind of season. You didn't have anyone on the pitching side that you could point to and say, all right, that looked legitimate. That looked like what Chris Tillman did say in 2012. For the last era of the Orioles, and Chris Tillman ended up being in their rotation for the better part of the next 4 or 5 years after that. So that's what was disappointing for me. Will we see any of those guys emerge? I mean, I still think Mike Ballman is the guy that has the most upside if he's healthy. And he only had a cup of coffee last September. We did not see him over the weekend. I would assume, you know, we'll see him at some point here this week, whether he's starting, whether he's, you know, on the back end of one of these tandem piggyback kind of situations that they're going to use in part because of the abbreviated spring. But Mike Elias said it just a couple days before the season started. He flat out said, I mean, we need someone to emerge from that group. And I said all along, those aren't the guys that are going to make or break the rebuild, but they are guys that if you get one or two of them to step forward can expedite this maybe a little bit, you know, maybe be in a position where one or two of these guys can step forward. It makes 2024 look better than it does right now. So we'll see. You know, Dean Kramer gets hurt warming up in the bullpen on Sunday with an oblique issue. You certainly don't want to see that. But by and large, over the weekend, you know, John Means pitch count caught up to him on Friday, but he looked like John Means otherwise, you know, an abbreviated spring. And we saw pitchers around the league not going as deep in games in large part because of the abbreviated spring. But, you know, Jordan Lyles, not good on Saturday. Tyler Wells gets knocked out early Sunday. Overall, other than Paul Fry, who I I've never seen anything like what his numbers have been against the Tampa Bay Rays, pitching in relief the last 2 years. Other than him, the bullpen wasn't bad, but you don't get quality outings from your starting pitchers, and you went 2-for-24 with runners in scoring position over the weekend. So going up against a team in the Tampa,
situational hitting's another issue all along, right?
Yeah, like, I mean,
that's another way you go 52 and 110.
Sure. And it's also a factor of, we were reminded, hey, the Tampa Bay Rays are pretty good. And this goes back to the point you were making about these young pitchers. You're going up against the American League East. I mean, it is what it is right now. You have four teams in the American League East that are playoff caliber, playoff quality teams, and you're the one that isn't. So whether it's a three-game series down at the Trop, or whether it's going to Yankee Stadium, or going to Fenway Park, or going
across the board, brains beaten in, Luke.
There are going to be a lot of series like that. And right now, I mean, right now, go back to last year, they've lost 15 straight against Tampa Bay. I mean, it's brutal. It's brutal. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it. I mean, were there some individual nice things that happened over the weekend? Sure. You know, I had some nice debut, you know, Felix Bautista, really interesting kid who went from single A Aberdeen to triple A last year and to the 40-man roster this offseason. You know, threw 99, struck out Arozarena, struck out Wander Franco in his inning plus of work. So, yeah, that was good to see. But that alone, Ryan Mountcastle hitting a home run, Anthony Santander hitting a home run. You know, some of the, I mentioned Keegan Aiken, you know, some nice individual things that happened, but not nearly enough team-wide good things happening. And that's why the Orioles are 0-3 for the first time since 07 and coming home and looking for their first win, as feels weird saying this. I feel it's circa 1982, 1990, something like that. The Milwaukee Brewers coming to town. Definitely strange to say that.
Yeah. I saw the Phillies like opened against the A's, and I'm like,
it's weird.
Just made me think of like Charlie Finley and the Kansas City Athletics and, you know, whatever weirdness this is. I guess, you know, Vukovic and Sutton and Moose Haas aren't going to be, you know, rolling out for the Brewers. Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke, and Luke at WNSD.net. You can also make sure you're on our WNST tech service, brought to you by our friends at Coons Baltimore Ford. Dennis will be here on Thursday from 3 until 5, driving you home. I'm doing the crab cake tour. Opening day and all it represents, and if anybody's listening to this afterward, just pretend that they won if they lost or whatever. You know, we sort of know where all this is. Finding your way back to the ballpark, getting tickets, rite of spring. I don't know that the lockout had anything to do with this. Quite frankly, it's a favor when you're playing April 11th instead of March 31st when it comes to weather. And they're going to get some decent weather, maybe a little rain this week, but not, you know, not what I remember when Juan Nieves threw the no-hitter, which is like 37 degrees. You could see your breath, right? You know, guys are wearing the earmuffs, you know, the pulleys up under their hats and all of that. Wrigley Field-looking stuff, hot dog wrappers blowing around, all that. There's none of that. I don't know what's going to lure people to the ballpark. I mean, they got this kid that's a local kid. I mean, he was serving crab cakes at Fadley's at Christmas time, helping Damien and my friends at Fadley's box crab cakes because he grew up in their house. So he's like as local gets. I mean, it's a beautiful Jim Traybury, Bill Ripken-y kind of Cal fine, but Cal's a different guy. But when local guys play and play here and play well, Dave Johnson, that it's just a wonderful story. I mean, amidst all the awfulness,
yeah,
I want to like meet Bruce Zimmerman one day.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and look, I'm just because I talked about these guys that are in their mid-20s and waiting for someone to step forward. I mean, he was the one up until June when he had the biceps issue and then had the freak ankle issue working out in August that, you know, he got back and pitched at the very end of the season, had a couple outings. You know, but in early June, he was the one of that group that actually, you know, he had an ERA under 5 at that point.
It looked like he was the fifth starter they were looking
for. Yeah. Well, and by default, he was kind of their number two or number three. But, you know, right. but in a more competitive
environment. He was the one guy you could say, all right, he's a major league.
A maybe, right, exactly. And look, I mean, that's the thing with him. I mean, he doesn't have overwhelming stuff. I mean, he's not, you know, he doesn't throw 98 miles per hour. You know, he doesn't have devastating secondary pitches, but he's what you know, what baseball people will talk about, he's got pitchability, you know, where you know, he can use his, what he has effectively, change his speeds, you know, locates when he's at his best, he can do those things and can be competitive for you. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great story. I mean, it really is, as much as, yeah, I mean, you said it, is the lockout part of it in the sense that, you know, people that go to opening day, maybe they put in for their day off on March 31st back in January, and they had to change it up in that regard. Yeah, I'm sure there's a little bit of that. But hey, you and I mean, without even having to do any investigating, if you're on the Orioles mailing list, you've been getting an email in your inbox just about every day talking about opening day tickets. That's pretty clear cut where they are in terms of selling tickets. And you know, can't blame anyone at this point where they're, you mentioned, what is there to look forward to? As I mentioned at the beginning of our discussion, when is Adley Rutschman getting here? When is Grayson Rodriguez getting here? When is DL Hall getting here? Because you're talking about the elite of the elite prospects in the system right now, guys.
I just want to know what night Ohtani's going to pitch when the Angels are here.
There's that as well. No question about that. So
takes me back to my youth and my dad when Sixto Lescano comes. Just give me a couple players I can go see, you know. I was in New York on Friday, and the Yankees were opening against the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was walking through Midtown Manhattan. My wife and I went to see Billy Joel. And, you know, I saw the Yankees jerseys out in full force. But I walked around the city, dude, and I'm not being mean. I stuck my head, and I think, you know, I drink beer, especially on that kind of a day. You know, I walked into places. The city was buzzing more with soccer games than baseball. And I found that to be, I didn't see any Red Sox gear at all, but I saw Yankees stuff. I saw guys, white males, hey, Yankees, hey, yeah. They were all getting on the subway. Because I'm used to that when I go up there, but there wasn't like opening day signs out, people taking the day off from work to watch the Yankees. It didn't feel that way in Manhattan. And I walk 36,000 steps.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak. New York's, no, I mean, it's a humongous city, and there's lots of interest of a lot of different things. I mean, yeah,
no, so it's just opening day, and I want it to feel, yeah, like I'm, I mean, not a hater.
I guess
I'm a guy that, yeah, wants to have that tickle in my belly and all that it's not being provided right now. Although I will say, I didn't know that they were not 0-3 ever since 07. Like, it feels to me like they had to be 0-3 at some point, but if you don't, well, and they weren't.
Well, and maybe if you're looking for some hint of optimism, hey, last year they swept the Red Sox the first weekend of the season. And the year before, they took 2 out of 3. They took 2 out of 3 before from the Yankees the year before that. And well, we saw how that turned out. So maybe it's just a reminder that we, you know, the first series is not an indictment, and it's not a, you know, a sign of great things to come if things go well. It's what it is. The Tampa Bay Rays are better than them, much better than them. We knew that before Friday. We knew that before a 3-game sweep. We knew this team has deficiencies. And, you know, like I said, if you're looking for me to paint, I guess it would qualify as more optimistic. I do think they're going to be better later in the season because of some of the young names coming up. And I think that is going to have a lift. You know, that's going to provide a little bit of a lift for the Ryan Mountcastles, the Cedric Mullins, the guys that by comes August and September, even if they individually are playing well, you know, they're beaten down, but because,
yeah,
they're
if you're
on their way
2-58 getting into July.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough.
And you know,
I don't care who you are. That's tough.
Yeah, you know, and if you end the year 34-44, yeah, have you improved? You know, probably that will happen if these pitchers come up and take the ball every fifth day and are what they're advertised to be,
sure,
which isn't Sandy Koufax or even John Means, but it's, hey, you know, kid, you're going to give us 92 pitches, right? You're going to get us to the fifth inning. You're not going to give up 8 runs. You're not going to get run out of here in the third inning, you know, going 94 pitches deep and leaving 7 runs on the board. Like, as long as that's not happening, and to your point, there's no rush to bring any of these guys up to have them come up here and get their brains beaten in. They've got other guys to do that.
Right. And I'll even beg to differ with you a little bit. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez and DL Hall, the expectations are higher for them. I mean, these are not just the Orioles' best prospects. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez is regarded by many people outside the Orioles' sphere of punditry.
Well, dude, if he comes up here and he's 4-0 in his first five starts and his ERA is .135 and he, you know, and he's got 34 innings in and, you know, he struck out 48 in the big league, if that's where it is, the first five starts, I'm in.
Sure.
Know, but I've also seen Rocky Coppinger. Of course. I've seen all sorts of things.
Of course, but my point is, unlike Rocky Coppinger, who was hyped up a lot by the Orioles, but if you go and look at where he was ranked in Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs, I don't think he existed then.
You're not going to tell me Sid Griff was going to have a home sell one of the prospects of the Baltimore Orioles organization, are you, Luke Jones?
But my point is, lots of people who have no ties to the Orioles directly really like them a lot. And we're talking about legitimate, very good pitching prospects. And like I said, Grayson Rodriguez, pitching for Norfolk the other night, pitched very, very well. So
I'm glad you're setting me straight and you're raising the bar. I mean, it's been a long time since we raised the bar around here.
Let me be very clear. That doesn't mean I'm going to guarantee that they're going to be Cy Young Award winners. But my point is, these are very highly regarded. Unlike this 20-something, mid-20s group that I'm talking about now at the major league level, they were guys that, okay, you know, at one point in time, Keegan Aiken was, you know, considered a top 10 prospect within the system. Dean Kramer, same thing. Of course, Kramer was, you know, the other piece along with Diaz and the Manny Machado trade. You know, but they weren't top 100 prospects around baseball, whereas Rodriguez and Hall have been for multiple years now. So does that mean it's going to work out? Of course not. You know, we can all remember some of the top pitching prospects across baseball for years and years. You know, go back to, who was it, Brian Taylor for the Yankees back in the early 90s. And, you know, some of them don't work out, or some of them end up being but sometimes they end up being great. And the Orioles are really hoping that these two guys are going to come up and be great. And it doesn't mean it's going to happen in June or that they're going to be great in September, but you're hoping to see those signs. And that's where I said the interest for this team at this point, compared to last year, compared to pandemic issues aside, 2020, 2019, this is the year where some of these elite prospects are going to start arriving. And, you know, you're hoping that the guys that Mike Elias and Sigma Dell have drafted over the last two or three years, guys that are their guys that they picked in 2019, in 20, in 21, you're hoping that they move quickly, because we've talked about it a lot. Their focus on college hitters in the draft. What should that tell you? Okay, we can debate whether a college draftee has the same ceiling as an 18-year-old that you draft out of high school. But what we should agree on is, if that prospect's worth his salt, he shouldn't have to be dabbling in the minor leagues for 3 years. Then he should be, Colton Cowser should be a guy that, you know, not this year, but conceivably could be in the major leagues next year. You know, but they drafted him last year, in the first round. So that's where we start to look at this thing. And, you know, as much as we've talked about placeholders, and Lord knows there are still placeholders on this current big league club, but feels like this is the year, if things are going to work, and that's an if. I don't know if it's going to work, but if they are going to work, it feels like this is the year where they do turn the corner in that regard. And again, do I think that's going to make a meaningful difference in the win-loss column? You know, if meaningful means you lose 97 games as opposed to 110, maybe, but certainly that still leaves you in last place. It still leaves you as a very poor team, looking at it in terms of wins and losses. But if some of these guys arrive and play as advertised, this is the year, like I said, where I could conceivably see them being a better team in August and September than they're going to be in April and May, which, sad to say, don't think is going to be very good. And, you know, we got a little bit of a indication of that over the weekend against Tampa Bay. But Rays are really good. The Orioles aren't. And, well, we saw that play out over the course of 3 days, where you don't get great starting pitching and you don't hit. And, you know, you have one or two guys in the bullpen, you know, but rest of the guys pitch well out of the pen, but one or two guys struggle. Well, adds up to 0-3. And here we are as the Orioles come home, getting ready to begin celebrating the 30th anniversary of Camden Yards. Doing these every 5 years, I overkill, but if you don't have anything,
it's been 30 years since Sutcliffe, man. 30. I mean, it just can't be.
Here's the wild thing for you. I was talking about this. I actually had my best friend, you know, guy that I had Ravens tickets with way back when, went to opening days with before, you know, when we were in college and before that. It's crazy to think. Now, this is the 30th anniversary season, but this is season number 31 for the Orioles at Camden Yards. They spent 38 at Memorial Stadium. We are rapidly approaching. We're within 7 years now talking about the Orioles having played at Camden Yards as long as Memorial Stadium, which is just crazy. But also, and I don't think anyone needs a reminder, I'm not exactly speaking out of turn.
The Memorial Stadium thing went better.
I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, you talk, I think I looked it up. Don't quote me on this as 100%, but I'm pretty sure they had, I think it was 17 out of 38 seasons of 90 plus wins, while the Orioles in the Camden Yards era have 3 seasons of 90 plus wins. So it's where the results speak for themselves. As I always kind of joke, you know, I was born 2 weeks after the Orioles last won the World Series, and you can see I've got some gray in my hair at this point. That's how long it's been. So, you know, that covers most of the Camden Yards era. You know, the last 7-8 years at the old stadium at 33rd Street. But yeah, suffice to say, I'll say this much. And I wrote this in my 12 thoughts, 12 Orioles thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com. All these, you know, 25th anniversary, 30th anniversary of Camden Yards, to me, all it really illustrates is it's a shame how few relevant, really special events and memories and quality clubs have played at what is a jewel of a ballpark. It's still a beautiful ballpark, you know, new left field wall feelings aside, whether you like it or not, which, by the way, I'm looking forward to seeing it. That's my overall position. And
I reserve flyouts, do you? Good for you.
I like doubles and triples. I like, hey, how about this? Play good defense out in left field. And, you know, fewer home runs, sure, but we could see some extra base hits. We could see a few more singles drop in front of the outfielder, playing a little bit deeper. I don't want to see the bandbox pop up home runs anymore, whether it's the Orioles or the opposition hitting them. I want to see more balls put in play. And we complain so much about what? Too many strikeouts, too many walks, too many home runs in today's game. Well, this isn't going to fix the strikeouts and walks part per se, but I think there is an argument to be made that, you know, we could see some more interesting play out in left field. I'll say one thing, whoever's playing out there, whether we're talking about Austin Hayes for the Orioles or whoever's playing left field for the opposition, better be ready to run because there's a lot more ground to cover out there. That's for sure. But overall, going back to the ballpark, it's a shame 30 years later, you know, still holds up, still beautiful, still a great place to go and just watch a ball game. But the lack of success, it is a real shame when you consider what it was at Memorial Stadium for 38 years compared to what it's been for 30 at Camden Yards.
Luke will be monitoring all things Orioles for us here at WNSD and Baltimore Positive. All of our Wise Conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. Big appreciation for them now in our second year of sponsorship and telling Wise Conversations and Wise Stories along with our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I got my Betty Boop scratch-offs. Roz is giving me some new scratch-offs we're going to have up at the Greenmount Station stop on the Maryland Lottery Crab Cake Tour, presented in part by our friends at Goodwill Industries. I've been putting my spring cleaning together as well. Friday in Hampstead, next Friday, the 22nd, we're going to be at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog in White Marsh. My dear pal, Andy, I can't wait to have Andy on the show. From Baltimore with love, we're going to have crab cake with him. And then on the 27th, we're going to be at Conrad's Crabs in Perry Hall, just down the street from Andy, down on Bel Air Road. So northeast side, where I lived for a long, long time, reminiscent of our barn days. We got an NFL draft ahead. We got opening day. We got a Calais Campbell back in a Ravens uniform. Things are happening. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.